Welcome to the Buyer's Desk, your weekly resource for all things natural food retail.
This season, we're shaking things up with shorter weekly episodes to fit your busy schedule.
Each month, we dive into SPINS data, explore trends with industry leaders, spotlight emerging brands, and share actionable strategies to help you thrive.
Get ready to explore the world of natural food retail.
Hey, folks, and welcome to the Buyer's Desk. I am your host for today's episode, Chris Sorensen, and I am joined by two of Infra's heavy hitters out in the field, Braden Flores and Rachel Keeler, both promotions and merchandising advisory specialists. They've been working closely with Infra members to level up their merchandising game, making sure stores not only look amazing, but drive more sales through smart and intentional merchandising. We're giving you a sneak peek today into our upcoming Infra conference session, Core Principles of Effective Merchandising. It's a foundational seminar for retailers looking to sharpen their skills and build habits that move product. So we won't spill all the beans here. We might get close. But we are going to dig into why great merchandising matters, how to spot opportunities in store, and the tried and true techniques that separate a good display from a great one. So let's get into it. Thanks, Rachel and Braden, for being here. I really appreciate you guys taking the time out of your busy day. You're not in stores today, so that's great. Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, you guys both spend a lot of time in stores. That's like most of your, sometimes 3, even 4 weeks out of a month. Like you guys are in stores a lot working with members. So I wonder, just at the basis of this, like what's the most common merchandising opportunity you spot right away when you walk in a store?
Off the top of my head, Chris, signage. More of it and bigger, always. Every single member could have more signage and bigger.
Yep, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, really, it is signage. So it's not even the way it's built. It's just having signage, right? Making sure that people know what the price is.
To that point, you could also, if you wanted to go a level deeper, make sure that the signage that you're using has all the important information on it too. That's a big thing as well. So like if you're doing promo signage, making sure you're calling out how much people are saving right there, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So if you think about outside of signage or like end cap headers or something like that, what are maybe some of the fundamental like building techniques or the way a display is built that you guys notice that there's opportunities for?
Sure. Yeah. I think one of the opportunities I see most often out there is just simplifying what you have on your displays. A lot of times we see, you know, multiple SKUs across many categories. And that really just slows down the customer's decision-making process. And, you know, a lot of times you're just going to miss an opportunity to get something in their basket. Simple is most effective. So fewer SKUs, big, bright signage, calling out a nice sale price, and get that product in their carts.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot where people want to like put everything like, oh, I got to give them all the answers, the full solution. Or I have to put everything out on the display, like if it's a theme display. So yeah, you're totally right. Keeping it simple because we're not building sets. We're building promotional end caps, right? So thinking about the seminar that we're doing, the core principles of effective merchandising, we're going through some of these different principles, but we're also going through like different techniques and tactics to use. So what do each of you, like Braden, maybe I'll start with you. What's one of the core principles that you think every store should focus on when it comes to merchandising?
I think my top one is abundance on shelf. So making sure that your displays look full and appealing, the more product that it looks like you have on the shelf, the more appealing that end cap or display is going to look to your shopper versus something that's very thin. Maybe there's a lot of gaps in between. Maybe what they're mostly seeing is the back of your end cap as opposed to the product you're trying to sell them.
Yeah. And I agree with that too. I think abundance is huge, right? Because if you think about coming into a store and seeing an empty end cap, it kind of feels like, you know, that's not attracting me to come to it. But, you know, the whole shelf doesn't need to be full. But Braden, like you said, if it's tight and there's not a lot of gaps, you can only have like two products deep and that shelf will look full, right? As long as you're filling in the sides and things like that. So I think it's not only abundance, but it's also the appearance of abundance, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't actually have to be packed all the way to the wall, but it should look like it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd always leave like the top two, like if it was all the same thing on a shelf, I'd keep the top two and the bottom two, just like two, three deep, just enough so it looked deep and all my product would be stacked in the middle, right? Because that's where people shop from, that strike zone.
Right.
Yep. Absolutely.
So Rachel, what would you say is like your one core principle or technique that you think is the most important?
Well, on those abundantly stocked end caps, I would focus on a solution or theme because I think it improves your chance of a customer picking up each of the items on the display. It's an additional sales tactic for you. So if you have like a cereal and a milk on an end cap, it's more likely that people are going to pick up one of each of them versus if you have a cereal and a can of tuna. Those two things don't often remind you need the other one. So, you know, work within that theme.
Yeah. Trying to solve that problem, the question that your customers are coming in, like what's for breakfast, what's for lunch, what's for dinner, what am I snacking on? And so, yeah, if you can solve that meal solution or the snack solution or the like workout solution, like the seasonal solution, like there's all these solutions that you can provide and giving them like two or three things. And then, you know, if you can throw a recipe card on there too, so that they have the idea of like, oh, and get these few things from produce, these things from meat. Yeah, I agree. Because somebody might be coming in for one of those things, but then they see, yeah, the other things that are complementary and be like, oh, well, I'll get this and this too while I'm here.
Right.
Building exactly. That basket size.
That complementary item thing too, like coffee and creamer, all those kind of things. They just go together like peanut butter and jelly. Like, so, you know, keep them stocked, keep them full.
Yeah. And I think that could be a challenge for some retailers, like also thinking about like, how do things go together in like a set and set adjacencies? Then like, how do they go together for display or end cap, which can sometimes be different, right? So yeah, it's something that, you know, Infra also tries to help by putting end cap planners together to provide inspiration. You know, it's not always going to be the solution you're going to go with, but as long as, you know, have some inspiration of like how the pairings or things like that. So yeah, I love that idea too.
I think it's important too to like take that as inspiration, but also to be creative and give it a try and see what happens. And if it doesn't work, try something new the next time as well. And just getting into the habit of being creative with it too, you know, trying something new.
Yeah. So I started to allude to this with the end cap planners, but how do both of you coach stores on planning and building their promo displays? Because I'm sure each retailer is unique.
Oh, for sure. In addition to resources, I like to try to break it down into bite-sized pieces. And then when possible, try to help identify additional people on staff and teammates we can include in the process to make it more manageable so it doesn't all fall on one person's shoulders.
Yeah, I agree. All of our members are different, even sometimes multiple store members. Each store is different than the other stores. I usually try to meet them wherever they're at in their current promotional planning and or execution. Let's start with the lowest hanging fruit and build on some, you know, execution from there going forward. So maybe it's simply just getting that signage up. Okay, now we've crossed that off the list. So next month, you know, let's start dialing into simplifying those end caps. It could even just be that they don't have any planning process for, you know, promotional merchandising yet. So let's start there. What does that look like? Let's start at the easiest point and then build on it.
Yeah, I always like to use that reference that if you're not doing like a full robust planning, ripping off a piece of cardboard and taking a Sharpie and just like pairing things together and saying display one, display two, that's planning. You know, at minimum, just put some marker to cardboard, pen to paper. That's something. So yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's walk the floor and pick a couple of these things and sketch out what we could put on them.
Yeah, that's great. Rachel, any other thoughts on how you coach stores in building and planning promo displays?
I mean, generally it's trying to jump in the calendar too, to try to get them to start thinking ahead in that 2 month ahead sort of time frame versus the month ahead or sometimes a couple weeks ahead. So trying to move that. Yeah. Or day of. Yeah. I didn't want to say that out loud, but,
hey,
it happens.
It's reality. It's our reality sometimes, right?
I don't want to put anybody on blast though, you know?
Hey, I've been there.
So,
you know?
but just trying to get them to start thinking ahead and start, like, I think of it like jump roping. Like, how can you get in on that jump rope? Like, how do you dive in on that first time when you're trying to jump ahead a little bit and start with a process and build in that time into it too? So a lot of mine is organizational, putting calendars together, looking at a lot of the files together and sort of mapping out your workflow and seeing where we can start sort of piecemealing our processes into what you're already doing.
No, that's great. Cause that was kind of what I was going to ask you guys too, is I know from when my store went from the monthly promo cycles to biweekly, for me, it felt like I needed to like redo my routines, like my daily cycle of like how I did stuff. How are you guys working with members on their merchandising habits or routines when it comes into building into their like daily or weekly rhythm? So I hear you say calendars are one of the ways. What are some other things that maybe you guys help with to like get a rhythm or get a routine going?
Looking for patterns, like in our promo calendar, there's just one big pattern for the most part. So looking for those patterns and kind of helping people find ways to leave breadcrumbs for themselves in the future. That's what I like to call it. So that future Rachel doesn't have a ton of work piling up on her. I like to leave little breadcrumbs to help her out. Things like that. For like specifics, a lot of it is finding ways to streamline the process. So maybe they're doing something one way, but it's a little bit more manual. Finding a way to work some kind of streamlined automated system in using Excel or something too. So sometimes there's, you know, other ways to kind of use technology to kind of help buy some more time into your process too.
Oh, that's great. Brayden, any thoughts on that?
No, I agree with Rachel on that. I think, you know, a lot of times it's finding out what are the current challenges. What are their current roadblocks? What resources do we have that are kind of plug and play for them that can alleviate maybe some of those challenges? And then what are we missing that they might be able to, you know, use either their POS system to solve for, or they have, you know, some kind of genius staff in-house that can handle like maybe some of the graphic artist stuff, or, you know, how do we put all of this together to make it simpler down the road? And then just breaking up those tasks a little bit so that it isn't all the things all at once, you know, on one person. How do we delegate some of the tasks across the team so that it's, you know, many hands making for light work?
Yeah, I think that was something that took me maybe more years than it should have to really, you know, lean into. Right. Like, I think I was trying to do like sale changeover, like all in one day, all with one crew, and it just burned people out. And realizing that, like, hey, I can have my night crew like pull down the end caps and re-merchandise on like a side cap or a side display, or like re-merchandise in a secondary display. And we would keep that on sale for like another week or so. And then I'd have my morning crew come in to like fresh blank end caps and build the new end caps. And it's like, whoa, splitting that up between two crews is huge. But like, Brayden, what you're talking about is like, you know, assign someone to do the signs, sign someone to pull down signs, and like break that out among different people. So yeah, one person or like one crew can get burnt out pretty easily.
I think it's also important to create transparency in the process too, so that if there are people out and, you know, somebody's out for a week or has to go visit their family far away or is sick, you guys know that there's a void in that process and there isn't somebody left like, oh, I was waiting for so-and-so to hand me the file and I didn't get it. You can jump in and you can help each other too. So I think that's a big part of it, is having the communication and transparency in the process and looping in the whole team, like you said, Chris, too.
Yeah. And having an SOP, right? So not only do you like have something for posterity or to be able to train someone in, but yeah, for those scenarios where someone's sick or gone,
or like,
they can step in.
God forbid you want to take a vacation or something too. So that somebody could step in and cover your shift for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do we pass the baton?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That can be really hard though. Like, right. I know for me, like I loved merchandising so much that I took pride in my merchandising, and to like delegate that off to a person to do the planning and all of that, it was like, well, are they going to be able to do as good to me? Like, yeah, for a 2-week period, of course they'll do fine. You know, well, we can get better over time. We can refine it. Nothing's ever perfect, but we're also, you know, we're just working towards perfection. So,
well, that's the nature of the game too, is on this cycle, you always have the next period to do better. There's always one coming. So I love that.
Yeah, I love how you said there's always the next period to do better, because one thing I did want to ask you guys too, and Rachel, I know you worked at Spins for a period of time. We talked with Jim in an earlier episode about, you know, being able to measure performance. And so we talked about all the Spins metrics, like prior period, you know, looking at last year, looking at incremental unit and lift. When you guys are in stores, do you talk to members at all about like just looking at how an end cap or how a display performed? And how do you guide someone that's not maybe currently doing that? Like what's the entry level? What do you say is like, here's the first thing to look at just to see if it was effective or not?
I usually start that conversation by asking, how do you feel that this did when it was on promo last time? Or how did that promo go for you last time? Because, you know, buyers, because they're the ones doing all the ordering, they have that gut instinct and they have that feeling of what they've been ordering and what they've been stocking out. They kind of have that good idea. But when it's on an end cap, it's a little bit harder to gauge because they're maybe not touching it as much, or maybe other staff are fronting it and stocking it out for them. So some of the things that I like to do is run through some of the dashboards that we have built internally that kind of give us a little bit of insights into some of how those promos are going. Sometimes I'll pop into Satori and we'll run through an overview of the store sales by department, depending on what goals or what projects we've been working on, whether it's something specifically in body care. We'll look at your body care sales together. Braden, you want to dive in, Braden?
Yeah, I think I'm on a different path here, but I think, you know, for me, the look back, you know, it's a little bit more, you know, what worked on this pairing, maybe what didn't, and then was it in the right place? Did I put it on a high traffic end cap, or did I put it at the back of the store where nobody really saw it? So like trying to get some of that in-store data for yourself and planning in the future. Maybe that pairing was really good. It just wasn't in the right place. People didn't see it.
Yeah, no, I think that's important, right? Like if you're, you know, putting your cereal and milk display, you know, back by the milk, you know, is it actually doing better because the cereal's by the milk? But then is your aseptic milk or your shelf-stable milk not performing as well because it's by the regular milk? So in that scenario, should you just do cereal by itself? Like there's all those things you have to think of, like was the pairing good? Yeah, did they perform well together? Yeah, I looked at that quite a bit as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to have, you know, a kind of open mind to all the variables that could impact, you know, your promotional displays and the season, you know, was it the right season for that? Was it a holiday during this week, the previous year? So maybe you overpurchased because the previous year you sold, you know, a whole bunch, but it was a holiday and people were in your store more. Or conversely, it was a holiday and everybody was on vacation, so nobody was in your store. So you underpurchased this year and the demand was a lot greater. There's a lot of variables to keep in mind, and that look back is super important.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, the one thing that you guys both mentioned quite a bit throughout this, we talked about planning. I think planning is huge, right? And if you're ever going to do something, right? If you're going to go out to dinner with friends, you plan to do that. You don't just show up at the place and hope that it all works. Well, sometimes you do, but you have to plan for a time, who's going, all where you're going, right? For it to all work. So you have to plan your promotions too. Like, what are you putting on shelf? When are you putting it out? When are you bringing it in? All of that. What would you say to a retailer who feels like they just don't have time for merchandising planning or merchandising at all? And how do you make the case for prioritizing it?
I would say that any extra thought and intention that you put into that display, you're going to feel the dividends in your sales. Like just that is 100% the case. And then additionally, your promo displays are essentially an additional salesperson that you don't have to pay. If you design them and build them correctly, they can have such a huge impact on your sales performance without there being that extra person in the aisle to do it for you. That's your end cap. That's what that's designed to do for you.
I was just going to add on that, yeah, you don't not have time. Promotional displays are meant to drive velocities. Their sole purpose is to create more dollars going out the door for you and quick turns on product. If you're not doing them, you're missing out on a lot of money.
Yeah. So what I hear from both of you is that the time and labor, like if you look at it from like a sales per labor hour, like the labor dollar dollars going into planning. If it, you know, cost a person that's making, let's just say $20 an hour, does 2 hours worth of planning. Yeah, it's $40 for that person, right? How much are you going to make on the display and displays that you planned? Probably more than that. Because, you know, if you think about what an item costs, the margin dollar and the turns from it being on a display, that, I mean, easily one item, it's like in a day, you can make $40, right? So I see what you're saying, Rachel, of like, yeah, spend the labor dollars to do the planning and you'll make, you know, 10 times, 20 times, 100 times
at minimum, in the sales. 10 times. Yeah. Minimum 10 times sales is my hope there. But yeah, absolutely. You've said it way more eloquently than I could. But yes, that's exactly what I was getting at, is if you build it, they will come, basically. And then if we could go back to signage for 1 second.
We can always do signage.
Thank you. because I think that part of the thing about signage that's really important to me too is that that's the other thing that you get to pull people over to things. So the bigger you go with it, the more people can see it from farther away. You're pulling customers from 20 feet away instead of just 5 feet. So go bigger, bigger font, bigger, big display, big signage is my best recommendation for people too. Pull people towards the deals.
Don't be shy.
For sure.
Well, you have a good point too, because people can be very price sensitive on certain items. And if they can see something that they're price sensitive of and they know, like, I pay $5 for this thing, I always pay $5. Sometimes I've been paying $6 lately. And they can look at a sign and see $2.99 from across the thing on that thing that they buy. I mean, people are going to go not only to get that one thing, but they're probably going to get a couple things off that end cap, because the, you know, when you see value like that, yeah, that gets people to put items in the cart or in the basket.
And I think especially in that kind of situation too, where they're having such a big savings and it's shifting their perception of your price, they might actually go and buy something else high dollar too, because in their brain, they've already saved so much money. So there is that little bit of, like, you know, offsetting one price and they're spending it somewhere else in the store too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the intention, right? That's what we're trying to do, is entice people to buy more through promotions and through our merchandising efforts. Yeah. I love this conversation. You guys hit a lot of great points. When I asked you guys to be on the podcast, again, it's been about a year and a half since you guys have been on. You've been in a lot more stores since then. Was there anything that you wanted to say or to mention to Infra members that you just think is the most important thing, or something that we haven't covered yet that people should really focus on when it comes to, like, promotional merchandising?
I think truly have fun. And if it's not fun for you, find somebody on staff who does enjoy it, because I think you're going to get a lot more from it if you put somebody in that role who enjoys the actual building and the challenge of it too.
Love that. Brayden, what about you?
I think for me, is merchandising should be two things. It should be suggestive, so that you are building baskets. That's the goal. It should be disruptive, probably most importantly, because your shoppers are coming in with a list of things that they need to buy, and your merchandising can disrupt their plan positively by suggestively filling their carts with items they weren't necessarily planning on getting on that trip. And those are kind of the goals, right? Force them to take different paths through the store and see parts of the store they've not spent much time in before. Maybe areas of the store they've not spent much money in before, because their list never took them over there. And then push them into the aisles where they're going to build their basket out for those suggestive items you had on end caps, creating that meal solution with a couple of pieces on the end cap. And now they have to round it out down the aisle. Those are kind of my two thoughts on it.
Well, that's great. I think that's a great way to kind of top this off, right? What we're doing here is trying to, you know, sell more money, and, you know, brands and retailers invest, you know, margin percentage and, you know, into these promotions. And what we hope by doing that is that we're driving trial, right? And that's kind of what you guys are talking about, is put things, you know, be disruptive, put things out there, and we want to drive trial of these new emerging brands, these awesome items, these regenerative organic products that, you know, are coming out. You know, in order to get people to purchase these and try this stuff out, we need to do a promotion. We need to get it out in front of them, and we need them to at least just try it once and realize how good some of this stuff is. So yeah, all of those ideas, all of those techniques, all spot on. So Again, I just want to thank you guys for joining me today and for all the work you're doing out in the stores. It's hard work. It's challenging work. And you guys are the merchandising coaches out there, right? Helping our members leveling up their merchandising game. So we hope today that we gave our listeners a taste of what powerful merchandising can do, or how powerful merchandising can be, not just for boosting sales, but for making your stores a great place to shop and an inviting place for the community to gather, right? So if this conversation got your wheels turning, don't miss the Infra Conference and come to our Core Principles of Effective Merchandising Seminar. We'll dig deeper into these strategies and some of the tactics to help independent retailers win at shelf. And we'll give you the practical tools that you can bring back to your store and start using it right away. So we hope to see you in person, because the three of us are going to be there doing this seminar with y'all. So take care. We'll see y'all next week.
Hey, thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, have you heard? Registration is open for the 2025 Infra Annual Conference.
I've definitely heard. I'm so excited. This year, we're celebrating 20 years of Infra and independent natural food retailers.
It's happening July 21st through 24th at the St. Paul River Center in St. Paul, Minnesota. This conference is packed with inspiration, education, deals, and fun.
Totally. I'm especially looking forward to the keynote speaker, Dr. Sammy Ramsey. He's amazing. His work on food security and sustainable agriculture is groundbreaking.
Right? And I heard he's going to share practical solutions for nourishing a growing world. Plus, did you know he was featured on Hulu's Your Attention, Please?
That is so cool. And beyond the keynote, there's so much to look forward to. The networking alone is worth it. You get to meet other natural food retailers and connect with peers from all over the country.
And don't forget about the Tabletop Buying Show. Over 300 brands with exclusive deals. It's a game changer.
We also can't forget about the educational sessions. They always have the best experts sharing insights and tools to help grow our businesses.
If you're passionate about strengthening local economies, building healthier communities, and making sustainable food accessible, this conference is a must attend.
Agreed. So mark your calendars, July 21st through the 24th in St. Paul, Minnesota. Register now to be part of the celebration.
Head to naturalfoodretailers.com for all the details. Let's make this 20th anniversary unforgettable.
We'll see you at the show. The 2025 Infra Annual Conference, empowering independent retailers, celebrating community, and shaping the future of grocery retail. We'll see you in St. Paul.
As we wrap up this episode of The Buyer's Desk, we'd like to extend our heartfelt thanks to the incredible Infra staff, contributors, dedicated independent retailers, and visionary natural food brands and business partners that made this episode possible.
Stay tuned for more inspiring insights and stories in the world of natural food retail. Until next time, thank you for your support. Angela Bozo, co-host and administrator.
Chris Sorensen, co-host and producer.
Kim Rout, executive producer and segment contributor.
Jim Olson, Spins segment manager.
Austin Hinkle, audio engineer.
Sarah Super, wellness strategist.
Madeline Ware, marketing writer, editor, and digital manager.
Haley Craig, outreach manager.
Raina Kittredge, segment contributor.
Bella Sislo, outreach manager and segment contributor.